I have been receiving very interesting questions, and I'm honestly learning a lot from your questions. Actually, this question came several times in the past, and the question is about what does it mean to love oneself? What does it mean? How can I make myself lovable? How can I love somebody else? I think it's an important question. I think it's a significant question. It tells a lot about the nature of things. First of all, I mean, as far as loving oneself is concerned, as I said, take that gift aside. That gift doesn't belong to us. The nature of things, that is, I'm talking about all these beautiful qualities that is given to Prophet Adam and passed to us, take that away. What is left is a handful of ashes. What is left is, as I said, a bit of mineral, a bit of vegetable, a bit of animal. There is nothing lovable about that piece. You cannot happen to love yourself. If you think yourself is that blanket quilt, what makes you lovable by others is that treasure, which is not yours. Definition of lovability is this. The more lovable you are going to be if you eliminate your existence. The less you are, the more you are you become lovable. Because the less your existence is, the less your self is, the more that treasure becomes visible. To be able to uncover that treasure that is given as a gift, you have to take yourself in between. You have to take it away because you're blocking it. The less you are, the more lovable you are. Does this make sense? The lovable one, he is the one, she is the one who eliminates herself or himself and actually approaches to become nothing. At that time, he or she becomes lovable. That is, religion is good conduct, beautiful behavior. If you surface that out, you become lovable. Now, and then, can we say are you allowed to love yourself? It's not a self-love anymore because you're not there. You don't exist. How can you say that you love yourself? You love something. You are thankful and satisfied with something that is given to you. It's not about self-love. It's about being thankful for the good qualities, beautiful qualities you are entrusted. Ali, we missed you. We talked so many important things here.
Best family.
Question is, you know, he spent a lot of time playing, you know, his tablets, and sometimes he took precedence over his homework. And if we started to push him to focus on his studies, reading Quran, he'll be started to going against our will. Mm-hmm. So he'll start becoming aggressive. I think I realized my childhood.
Yeah.
But if I realize that if I go, you know, showing power over that, and he will start to shut down and he will feel sad. And but if I try to please him, caress him, and tell him something, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, if I show power over him, he will cry, but then he will start. He will start to obey. I don't think it's the right thing, because I feel kind of bad afterwards. Mm-hmm. But what is the approach that I really should take?
If you show exercise excessive power, even if it is to encourage him to do the good thing, he's going to take it that good thing is the unpleasant thing. That's going to be something that he would dislike. You want him to like to pray, like to recite Quran. Do not make him choose between Quran and Xbox. You have to really, with behavior, which means a lot of sacrifice on your part, that you really have to distract him first from the addiction of Xbox. Probably we have a lot of addictions ourselves, which we kind of think they don't see. I'm sure we spend a lot of time and energy to entertain ourselves in different forms and fashions, and then they see that this is the way to pass time entertaining. They are doing this, and this is my entertainment. They have their own entertainment, I have my entertainment. Rather than, you know, forcing them to make a choice or using power to shut down Xbox, you really have to do this gradually. You really have to give him some time until the game is over, and then while he's playing, don't talk to him there, because he's shut. You cannot penetrate. But actually, once he stops playing, make a deal with him. Spend more time with him. Maybe, you know, playing with you, or reading a book with you, or discussing with you, or playing basketball with you is more fun than playing Xbox. Introduce something. Be creative. Introduce something instead of, as a substitute for Xbox, which is as attractive or near attractive. You really have to make him start, forgetting Xbox. But this is an incredible attachment. It's an addiction. Xbox, all these video games. These are not any less attraction or addiction than drugs or other things. You really have. And how are they treating drugs? You really have to take him away from that drugs slowly. Yeah, and by introducing them, by distracting them with something that they would enjoy, take them out to the movies. I don't know. I mean, bring an alternative at that moment that he cannot refuse, but not Xbox. Take him out for an ice cream. But the moment you say that if you play Xbox, I'm going to punish you, he's going to use this against you. He's going to use this actually as an attitude, an example attitude that he's going to start blackmailing everyone when his desires are not attained. I mean, you are the father. You have to sacrifice in time, in money. I mean, if you want him to do something better, number one is being a good example. Don't. I mean, if you want your children to pray, do you want your children to pray? You pray first. You do pray first. Meaning that let them see you, that you value prayers. Let them see you, that you value the words of the Quran. You respect the words of the Quran. Let them see you live Quran. It's not just a recitation. And when they may not be able to follow, do exactly what you want them to do, but plant that seed in them, and it's going to pay. Believe me, it's going to pay. But it's not easy. This is the easiest way. I have the power. I shut down the TV and I turn it off. I have the power to do that. It's the easiest way. That's the easiest way. And then that's the temporary solution, which will give you a temporal peace of mind. And as soon as he gets the next opportunity, he's going to get back. Know that. Know that bring a solution which is permanent, which stays. And then ultimately it's the love and compassion and respect. You know, they are really entrusted. They are really a personality entrusted to you. You know, I entrust my son to you. My son is going to live 3 months with you. Would you hit my son? I mean, you wouldn't hit my son because it's my son. It's my For God's sake, your children Allah Ta'ala has entrusted. I mean, how could you treat your children the way you treat, knowing that he is entrusted to you by him? These are his children, let alone my children. You know, if you treat your son like a treasure like that, they will listen to you. I mean, it is a possession. Our children are our possession, you know. We put them in a box, we put them in a case. They have to do whatever we have to do. It's my possession. That's my, like, my right arm. It's not. It's a personality. It's different than you. You cannot punish him. You cannot raise your voice even. You should not be even raising your voice. Because you're treating Allah.
Thank you very much.
I think you're doing a good job.
Not quite there.
And keep your promises. Keep your promises. Keep your promises. You promise something, do. Cannot catch them. I'm sorry. The reason for Sharia not being able to help accountable for people with evil thoughts is that, number one, this is actually very logical and reasonable part of Sharia. If you are doing, if you are harming yourself, and nobody, you are not becoming an example to anyone. For example, according to Sharia, if you drink outside and be an example as a drunkard, it's punishable. I'm not talking about, you know, Sharia law suggests that you should be punished for becoming a bad example. But if you drink in your basement, Sharia doesn't touch you. Cannot, nobody can touch you. It's between you and God. Sharia is jurisprudence, set of laws, fulfillments, regulations, that actually is there to regulate the relationship between people. So it's between you and the society. Sharia law is external interactions. Like it's a law, it's a regulation. So it's really trying to protect the traditions, Islamic traditions of the people who live together. That's why Sharia is there. That's why any thought, anything that you do between you and God, nobody can touch. As a matter, there's a beautiful story and a hadith about Hazrat Umar. You know, Hazrat Umar used to disguise himself and then try to check if people are behaving, you know, under his rule. And then one day he was walking on one of those streets, and then he started hearing laughters coming from one house. What's going on? And everyone is silent in the middle of the darkness and in the middle of the night. Why are these people so happy? So he approached the house, and then he saw a light. He approached the window. He looked from the window inside. Oh my God, a table is all set. People are drinking, all happy. You know, having found Shati, he got very upset. Oh my, I am the caliph of this land, and they are under my rule, they are drinking. So he was very, you know how Hazrat Umar was, very tempered. He walked to the front door, kicked the door open, and then the door was open, and he entered. You, I got you all, you're drinking. The man, the host. Ya Umar, you're right, we are drinking. We made a mistake. We broke one law, Islamic law. You broke three. You approached our house and you spied us. And then he actually called Surah Al-Hujura, that you're not supposed to spy your neighbors. You did not knock at the door, you kicked the door. There's an ayat. You're supposed to knock the doors before you enter the houses. You entered my house and you did not say salam That's another ayat. And Hazrat Umar is the just one. He said that this man is right, Umar is wrong, and he left. So even Hazrat Umar couldn't do anything about what they have been doing. That's my favorite story, by the
way. Doesn't mean he drinks, though.
Hmm?
Doesn't mean that you drink.
All right. And doesn't give me a license, either. Children not becoming, not owning or becoming our possession, that concept became more clear to me when I actually came to the realization that when you look at the life of hereafter, the description of the life of hereafter, you don't see that father, parent, son, daughter relations. That is, we are peers. I mean, the people who love each other are going to be like this together. But you will not have any right as a father. And he will not have any responsibility as a son. Isn't that strange? Isn't that amazing? Meaning that out there, when we go, this is the temporal life. This is the dream. This is the actual life is there. We are talking about, you're dealing now with someone who's going to be your peer there. I don't know, this kind of struck me when I kind of came to this realization.
I never thought about that.
Once I was talking to Tosun Baba and complaining or expressing my worry that Sinan is not working as much as I want him to. And he listened patiently and then he said, "Why are you making such a big deal out of this? You are not even going to recognize him in the MED." "Let go," he said.
Yeah, more than that. Yeah, that's very true. That's really the lesson that I took from Tosun Baba as well. But even the concern that we have now, is our concern limited, and should only be valued within our qualities? It is your worry. It is your worry. That is. He may be certain other skills that you don't. You may not be able to see certain skills that he has. Of course, you want him to be successful, but you cannot enforce your definition of success over him. He has his own qualities, which needs to be recognized. Yeah, which needs to be recognized. When Mehmet was like 6-7 years old, I always thought that such a prejudice. Imagine, I always thought that probably he's gonna follow me. Probably he's gonna be a computer scientist. And then I took those programmable Legos that you can actually bring them together and then create robots. And I entertain myself. I enjoy those Legos. He did not. He did not spend 5 minutes with those. Zeynep became a computer scientist. And I always thought that Zeynep is going to follow her mother. She's going to be an artist. Is going to do, artist. Mehmet became artist. It's such a conditioning that we have that, I like computer science, my son must like too. Why? And he doesn't like Legos, he doesn't like computer programming. He doesn't enjoy, he enjoys video gaming more than computer programming, but anything. And then the immediate reaction is that I'm not gonna make any good out of this. And I invest all these things and he's not learning. That's us. Yeah, when you punish them, you're punishing yourself. When you praise them, you're praising yourself.
But again, here, the Sharia is clearly saying the other way, right? You have to let them go to a certain age, but then you have to sort of force them. And even you could punish them if they don't do their prayers and all of that. So it's like a torture.
Well, I can interpret that. So this is the This is the structure. This is the way it is written. I can take the word force, and I can take the word punishment, and I can claim that I forced my children, I punished my children to do their prayers by showing them when I prayed, by showing them actually that praying is important to me for my life, I think I forced them. For expressing them that I would really love to see them praying, showing that desire to them by not following because they love me, my desires, I think they were being punished as well. Because I mean, we like to interpret the word punishment as, you know, get the stick and then chase after your children. This is the lower level of punishment. There are much more strong levels of punishment. If you love someone and tell and cannot follow that person's desires, it's a punishment itself. I think I forced them by coming here every Saturday. I think I forced them by, you know, praying at home without saying them, without really saying them, pray with me. Had I forced them the way 99% of the Muslims interpret Sharia, probably they would not have been praying right now. I bet they would not have been praying now. There is Sharia, I know. Sharia is the foundation. Put tariqa at the top of it. Put hakika at the top of it. Only then you will be able to reach the truth and then kind of penetrate and influence others. You know, the Sharia is the foundation. Go live in that foundation. Go live in that basement. Without that basement, you cannot put the first floor. But go live in that basement if you can. Why don't you add another floor? Why don't you add, you know, decorate with the hakika? And then they will come and live with you. They follow our emotions. They are like sponge. They even feel what we think, what we value. You know, this room is a sacred room because Tosun Baba gives talks here. They feel it. That is the Meydan. This is important. This is sacred. Why? Because you feel it. Because you think this it is sacred. Because you take it as sacred. You know, this is the place where we pray sacred. Because you feel sacred, they feel sacred. Upstairs? This is a place where we dump our children. It's not as sacred. Because it's not as sacred, they are jumping up and down. You know, whatever you feel, they reflect that. And then they complain, children are not behaving. You are not behaving, that's why they're not behaving. Don't come and complain about your children. Really, upstairs is not part of the mosque.
Junkyard.
Yeah. Right. If you treat that as a junkyard, and the kids say, "Oh, I must be the junk. If this is the junkyard, I must be the junk, and I have to behave like a junk." We really have to talk about what to do about upstairs.
They look forward to it every weekend. They want to go out there and play.
And there's nothing wrong with playing. There's nothing wrong with that. I encourage, and I actually, we should be more creative, creating more opportunities for them so that they can play more, they can interact more. But they distract less, they fight less, they hurt each other less. Even then, I'm not worrying about them, really. I mean, they hurt each other, and then the next moment, they are the best friend. But after that, I cannot handle the parents. There's nothing wrong with the children. See, you have to come to the realization that upstairs, you know, that space you see upstairs there, in that space we raised many dervishes. Think about upstairs is an area, is a place of education where we raised dervishes, and there are at least 5-10 dervishes came from upstairs here. If you look at upstairs as a ground where we raised and educated our dervishes, you wouldn't treat it as a junkyard. Imagine, those kids that are shouting and running, 10, 20 years from now, they're going to come downstairs and sit as a dervish here. Think about them as the future dervishes. Maybe your next Shay is there now. I'm jumping up. Handle that. In this dergah, we have two principles for kids. And we will not tolerate from those two principles. The first is, you are going to treat every child as if that child is your own, number one principle. Number two principle, you're going to teach your child that all and everyone here, the parents, they should treat them as their own. If we can follow these two principles, that's enough. And then my child, your child thing stops. It's our child. It's not your child, it's our child. It's not your father, it's our father. Zero tolerance. I mean, if you establish then this, then they cannot tell each other, my father beats your father. I know someone who had a beautiful child. She forced them to participate to zikr every Saturday. I mean, it was not a suggestion. He has to. The moment he reached to the age that he was independent, disappeared. We don't see him anymore. Zakirler kafayı buldu galiba. Naralar falan duyuyorum. In 10 minutes we can start the zikr. So we talked about ablution as a means of purification. The highest level of purification is purifying the heart from anything that makes you forget Allah Ta'ala. Anything that makes you forget Allah Ta'ala, cleansing the heart is a higher level of purification.
level of Veliullah. What is the ablution of that level of purification? Zikr. So zikr is an inner ablution. Zikr is the ablution of higher level purification, which is really cleansing the heart from anything that reminds you other than Allah. That makes you forget Allah. That's cleansing the heart. So this whole ceremony is a ceremony. It's a ceremony, but at the same time, we are really imitating those who take inner ablution. There are certain things that break your ablution. For them, for Veliullah, when there is any moment they forget Allah Ta'ala, a moment of heedlessness, they consider that their ablution is broken. Their inner ablution is broken. For us, it doesn't last long. We take the inner ablution the moment we take out of the zikr. Gone. That's zikr daim. They kind of keep that state for forever. That's called zikr daim. They are always in a state of inner ablution. They never forget their creator. They never experience a moment of heedlessness. Questions? Go to inner ablution. Prepare yourself for inner ablution.